But certainly food for thought to consider what's happening in the U.S. compared to the rest of the world. Let me change directions and talk about a new technology, though, that you might have read about a little bit, but where is this going? And that's transgenic animals. And what is a transgenic animal? Well, basically, a transgenic animal is one whose genome has been changed to carry genes from other species. Well, that sounds pretty complicated to me. So I'm just going to draw it here out for you. Essentially, what happens is we take a DNA from a different species or something, for example, like a human, maybe a protein from a human that we want to express in a cow, and connect it to the DNA from the cow, and sort of it goes through a bunch of processes, but you actually combine the DNA, and we eventually inject that DNA into an embryo. And then we transfer that embryo into a cow, and that cow gives birth to that embryo, and not all of the embryos that get injected with that new DNA actually turn out to express it. So you actually take blood tests and you figure out which ones of those calves actually express that DNA. And then you cross those animals that do express it. You basically just throw those other ones away, those other cattle away. You mate those that have the DNA expressed, and then you get a calf. And in this example here, what I have here is you actually, for this we have a milk protein that might help in terms of immune function in babies, and you express that in milk, and then you purify the protein and you can give it to babies. Very, very complicated technology. There are three companies now in this country working on it in cattle, but the great thing about it is there are going to be tremendous advantages from a production standpoint. What might we be able to see in the future in terms of production agriculture with transgenic animals? We'll be able to see some selection for specific traits. So you might be able to increase yields faster. We might be able to select animals specifically for tenderness. We might be able to select cattle specifically for growth rates and things like that. They'll grow a heck of a lot faster than selecting for generations and generations to get those things into your operations. It's going to alter milk quality or quantity of our product. We might even be able to select animals to reduce the lactose or reduce the cholesterol in the milk and purify some of the beef that we produce. Transgenic animals might also have the potential to enhance our ability to produce livestock that are resistant to diseases. Most of the research being done in this area is in the swine industry, but that's obviously going to transfer into the beef industry. And so, then the last point here is that there are tremendous medical and industrial products that I think we're going to be able to figure out over the years. So this is a technology you're going to be hearing more about. Is it functional at this point? Well, if you're one of those three companies, it is. But certainly from a beef producer standpoint, it's something to keep an eye on out for the future. Let me pass it on to Sandy to talk about cloning.
Okay, many of you have probably seen some of the news recently relating to cloning, and we just remind you that a cloned animal is something we might get if we identify an animal of superior genetics, and it may take us many years to identify that superior animal, that at that point in time we can make an identical twin to that mature animal to essentially continue producing that superior genetics that we've identified. So that process now is functioning in the commercial world. We're able to create those, and various scientific agencies then are evaluating that process and determining whether or not it's safe to go in our food supply. And you see here a list of entities from FDA to a European equivalent that have indicated they find no scientific data to indicate anything about those cloned offspring are unsafe, and that shouldn't be, since they're genetically equivalent to their the individual they were cloned from. And so the science supports the fact that these animals are safe. The challenge and the thing we want to spend a little time thinking on right now is, what does that mean from the consumer standpoint? And already we've seen a variety of comments relating to having cloned individuals in the marketplace. And you may know that FDA said it's safe, but let's hold off from putting any of that into the market stream even yet. while we're getting more consumer comments. And these are some of the immediate comments that came out to the cloning. We need to consider animal welfare, ethical, and environmental considerations of cloning. And some of those are, it's hard for me to fathom the environmental implications of cloning, but I'm working on it. And I think another point here comes from National Farmers Union. There's no data to suggest that any consumer demand for such products exists. And that doesn't surprise me that there wouldn't be consumer demands, but consumers don't demand that you, like, fertilize your crops or do other things that help you produce things more efficiently for yourself. So we have those types of things out there in terms of attitudes. And a useful thing for us to look at is this study from Maryland that looked at some of these consumer attitudes about why people are uncomfortable with cloning. The largest response, 32%, that animal cloning is morally wrong. The next response, highest level, 26%, said they were unsure of food safety from clones and offspring. Another large response, animal cloning might lead to human cloning, and we know that many of our technologies we do transfer, we initially develop on the animal side and it transfers to the human side. 14% unsure it's safe for the animal, and then 5% don't know or didn't respond to that question. So I think certainly that helps us give some insight into what others are thinking out there. And if we think back to 30 years ago when the first IVF human was born, there were lots of questions then about whether it would be safe, whether the individuals would be healthy, and again, should we fool with Mother Nature? But you know that there are many fertility clinics. I was trying to find the number of how many IVF-produced humans there are now, but I'm sure it's a rather large number. The desire for having a child has overcome some of that fear and concern. And so as we wind up here today, I just want to leave you with this thought as we use some of this technology, some of it more perhaps concerning than others to our industry, but what level of technology are you comfortable with? That, Patsy, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you. Let's give Sandy and Cliff a round of applause. Okay, did I lie to you? Did this team disappoint, or did they come through with some pretty fascinating stuff? I'll tell you what, guys, what we're going to do, we got a good 15 minutes here for questions and answers. What we're going to do is ask anybody with a question to come to one of the center microphones. We're in a fairly large room here, and one of my more frustrating things in life is not being able to hear the question. So we'd like you to come forward to the microphones, and with the stuff that was presented here this morning, gosh, there's just got to be a multitude of questions. Do we have anybody out there that wants to start us off? And while we're waiting on somebody, I'll start with a question here. Dave, I'd like to visit with you just a little bit about the work that you have done, and certainly you're one of the foremost people in synchronization methods in cows and heifers. Has there been any systems work done? And let me pose this question from the standpoint of timed AI versus heat detection, and the time and labor associated with heat detection and potential differences now between first service conception rate. What is your comments relating to potentially a seed stock producer who's in the audience today versus a commercial producer, the value of first service conception rate in terms of age of that calf, if a seed stock producer is going to sell high-priced bulls, that kind of thing? Do you have some comments, or is there some systems work out there that we can talk about for each percentage reduction in first service conception rate? You know, how much do we give up economically in sale price of bulls that we need to have a certain age before they can be marketed?
Yeah, can everybody hear me on that? I can't really cite any specific studies that have been done. I can give you some anecdotal examples of situations that would relate to the question you're asking, but I guess the point is that as we move to time breeding programs, in some situations, what we're seeing is that in a lot of our commercial herds, and I'd use our university herds as an example, we're getting comparable results with our time programs as we are in heat detection programs, and and our herd managers are the ones that really brought this to our attention. Their argument was is that in many cases they felt that the fact that those results were as similar as they are is simply due to the fact that these newer protocols, and I think that's one important point, if you compare the degree of synchrony that we're seeing with the newer protocols versus some of the older protocols that have been developed over the years, the degree of synchrony is so much tighter. And so if you're working with very large groups of cattle based on numbers, and you're sorting cows based on heat to breed according to heat, you're constantly in those cattle. And the stress relative to that, I think, is nothing to downplay. The flip side of that is that when you time breed cattle, basically everything is done as a group on that schedule. And so from the stress standpoint, I think it's reduced. Now, the flip side of that, and I'm sort of on the fence relative to this, is the fact that we've got producers that are doing a combination of things. So they're heat detecting up to a fixed time point, and then more or less pulling the plug. An example I would make relative to that is that we have herds that we work with that prefer to heat detect, breed by heat, up to, say, 80 hours. And I'll use the Kosing Cedar example as the protocol that I described. We've got herds that are in the 80% range in terms of pregnancy rates on cows using a combination of heat detection up to a certain time point and then time breeding. I think the point here is that there's it's not a cookie cutter in terms of one size fits all. Basically, I think the thing that any of you that are interested in doing this, the newer protocols are working successfully enough to where you can fit whatever works best into your management system to give you the best results that you feel like you can justify in terms of your time and labor.
Thank you, Dave. Questions from the audience? Well, then I've got another one. Here comes a gentleman. Here comes a gentleman right here.
On the nutrition side, when you supplement or you didn't supplement the cows, did you see a difference in immune response to the calves as far as do you have scab problems or anything like that in the calving season in that situation?
That was one of our first questions. Is this a true fetal programming effect, or is it something similar to like Odie demonstrated, that nutritional level before calving affected colostrum quality, immune response in the calves? And we have looked at colostral quality as well as immune response in the calves in that second study and have seen no difference in sickness or immune response, or, like I said, colostral quality. So we do believe it's something other than that. Birth weights have not been different. Weaning weights would be in benefit of animals that are supplemented on late, just in winter grass anyway.
Thank you.
Dave, I had a question about what are the practical limitations on the volumes of cows or heifers that can go under these protocols, and if you have bigger numbers, which systems seem to work best in being able to get all the cows bred or heifers bred in a day or whatever the time frame may be?
Yeah, I guess I think that's a really good question, because I think the thing is that you want to work within a system to where you can accommodate the time ranges that are described in the protocol list. So in other words, if you're working with groups of cows, and we have herds, for an example, that are doing fairly large numbers, if you've got groups of cows that you can move to or through in terms of getting those cows inseminated over a 3 to 4 hour time frame, if the window is that what's recommended, then I think you need to work that out relative to what your facilities, what your labor, and those constraints are going to allow. What do I mean relative to that in terms of numbers? In our experience, we probably prefer not to, at least on cows, in terms of sorting, getting the basics done up front in time to get everything ready to breed. Probably not exceed groups of anywhere from about 200 to 250, because that's using two technicians, having one person thawing semen, because that way then every cow goes through in the time frame that you're going to be comfortable with. If you exceed that and anything goes wrong, then you compromise the results on those cows that are waiting. And for that reason, our recommendation is probably not to exceed that. We have herds that, for instance, that that will schedule cows on a daily basis. Some of our larger herds, Circle A is an example, they'll time breed large numbers of cows, but they won't do them all in a day. They'll do anywhere from 100 to 200 every day of the week. But that's the thing that I think when you're moving into this that you need to take into consideration. The other thing you need to take into consideration are your technicians, because, you know, it's one thing if you've been breeding cows according to heat and breeding, you know, X number a day. But when you move into a time breeding program and you breed, you know, substantially larger numbers on a given day, that really changes things based on the workload on that technician and their success rate. And so you want experienced technicians that can move into a situation like that and perform as you would hope they would. But there's a lot to take into consideration when you move into these time programs that are different from breeding cows according to heat.
I know you didn't hit on it, but what about a 48-hour calf removal program for estrus synchronization program? Have you seen any fertility efficiencies or insufficiencies in that? And also, would you just rather, kind of your comments, your ideas, would you just rather use that as a priming device to bring those cows out of anestrus and then maybe jump-starting them towards a synchronization program?
Yeah, I'd comment, and then I'd let some of these other guys comment on that, too. We have honestly not combined calf removal with any of the cedar-based protocols that we've used. We did combine calf removal years ago when we were using the MJ-based protocols, MJ Prostaglandin or MJ Select. In our hands, what we did see was a slight improvement in total response, and this was when we were breeding cows according to heat. We actually saw a slight depression in pregnancy rate based on that. The numbers were not statistically different. If you've got a situation where you've got young cows or thin cows that you feel like your anestrus rates are considerably higher and you need possibly a combination of calf removal with a progestin, then I would consider it. But based on the results that we've seen so far in terms of mixed groups of cows with these cedar-based protocols, we have not done it, and I really, we're at a point where we're not really actively recommending it. Cliff might want to comment on that, too.
Yeah, I want to add on to what Dave said. If you do have some high-risk cows, the thin cows, late calving, young cows, generally those are the ones that would have the biggest positive effect. There was some work done in Colorado about 7 years ago looking at calf removal, and there was a positive effect. That was with the co-sync system without the cedar. I don't think there's been any work done in Bos Taurus cattle with the cedar in this country. excuse me. We have noticed tremendous effects of calf removal in Bos Indicus cross cattle, especially where we've done a lot of work in Brazil in the Bos Indicus type cattle. So if you do have Bos Indicus cattle, I would strongly recommend that from the time you give prostaglandin to the time you AI, you might see as much as a 10% increase in pregnancy rates.
Thank you, Cliff. We're going to have one more question. Ron, if you want to ask the last question, then we're going to have an announcement or two and get you to your next session.
Good job, guys, first of all. Philosophical question. What happens if you're a purebred breeder, okay, and you're using a timed AI protocol, and that becomes a major part of your emphasis, and now you turn around and you sell breeding stock to a commercial cattleman? Is there any potential for selecting animals that have a less desirable ability to exhibit estrus in a natural mating or a traditional AI program, okay, picking up heat? And that kind of gets into the systems, and we may not be quite that far along. Just philosophically, does anybody have a thought on that?
No.
I like that honesty.
If you look at the dairy industry, they've gotten that way without using it. So,
it's a good question. I would argue in some situations, you know, what we're doing with a lot of our commercial, and we've got a number of field trials going on in Missouri where we're taking this out of a farm or ranch and actually working with producers to try this and let them see how it works. In those situations, we're more or less focusing on one or two bulls. We're not using an array of bulls in those systems. So, you know, from the progeny standpoint, we're not going to have large comparisons in terms of that. But, you know, with time, as we see this adopted, those are some of the questions that I think will come up, but we don't have any answers to them right now.
Certainly, Ron, that's probably one of the biggest questions with people that are opposed to AI. That's one of the things they ask us the most is, are we doing something to long-term fertility? But I don't think we have an answer.
Great questions, great answers. We got about 4 minutes left in the session, guys, and now we're going to turn it over to you. We need your help. You've got an evaluation page in your packet. Please, please, please fill them out, because this is what we use to determine the program for next year and following years. We'd like your input. Please fill those out. Add some comments, good, bad, or indifferent. We want to know your thoughts. And if you bring them to the ends of the table, we'll pick them up as you guys leave. I haven't looked at the sheet. Take a look there. Five is high. Five means you liked it a lot. Okay? Thanks, guys. Great session. We appreciate your time and interest, and have a great Cattlemen's College.
This has been a production of Angus Productions, Incorporated, the industry's information leader.